There's not many of us, but I still think we're going to do Sunset. It's kind of a hard song to go. Or, who said Rainbow? Are we doing Rainbow or Sunset?
Yes.
Sunset?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a tough one. You got to sing out. Okay? You got to lead us. Let's go. Everybody stand up. Let me get this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
9 steps
up. That's right. All right. Let's see if I can get the old bones down here. I always do the wrong knee. You can come down right here, sweetie. Now, every time he doesn't sing like that, I just get his shoulder like this. Okay, scoot this way. Scoot this way. Stay with everybody. Everybody scoot up. Here we go. Say good morning. 1, 2, 3.
And his child will not forget. I'm ready for the Thankful to be here this morning. Thank you for, I'm thankful to have a job that I can do in this church. We'll ask Taylor to lead us in prayer.
Good to be here this morning. I've been under the weather. You can probably still hear some of that in my voice. But I had a desire. I'd been studying this lesson throughout the week, and even when I wasn't feeling good. And it's a beautiful lesson. There's so much in this. And just had a desire to be here and try to teach this morning. So Brother Carl said he was glad to see me when I walked in. I guess Jay and his family maybe are sick as well or been exposed to some illness, so remember them. My wife is sick, so a lot of illness going around. I got the one call this morning that Irene Golden is in the hospital and having some serious health problems, so let's remember her. So we're going to be in Exodus, the 25th and 26th chapter today. And this entire lesson is talking about when the children of Israel had just come out of Egypt and they had made some decisions that affected them, but they were now in the wilderness and they needed a place to worship. And they needed a place to stay close to God. And God is giving the instructions here to Moses, instructing him of how to build this tabernacle, this tabernacle, and we'll discuss it some, but it's an interesting place. It wasn't very big, but it was a place that they were instructed and told of what to do to worship God. And so they would set this tabernacle up and they would have a camp essentially there. And then when God told them to move, there was a process and they would take this back down, essentially pack it up, and they would move to wherever God wanted them to go next. And that went on for a 40-year period of time. I don't know how many times that they moved, but they moved several times. And there was a specific group of people, the Levites, who were the priests came out of the Levites, but also the Levites, there were a group of them that it was their job to set this up and take it down and set it up and take it down. And so that was, but they were a nomadic people. They were moving around, but God had a place for them to worship. And so we'll get into this. There's a lot in it. I desire your prayers. And as always, if you've got questions or comments, those are certainly needed. These first, we're going to be in Exodus 25, 1 through 9. I'm going to read through those, and I've got some thoughts on there, and then we'll try to move on over into Exodus 26. So you pray for me. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they may bring me an offering. Of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, ye shall take my offering. So The one thing that I want to point out in these first nine verses that I, to me, jumps out is this phrase here, giveth it willingly with his heart. At this point in time, and at every point in time, whether the people were under the law, which they certainly are here, or under grace, it always has to be with our heart, okay? And so they had a lot of requirements that they had to do to worship and for God to move and be with them. We're under a different covenant, so less requirements. But the one thing that remains the same is it has to start with your heart being in the right place. If they went through all of the requirements that they had to do under the law, but their heart was not in the right place, God would not move and have communion with them. But, and I'll never forget Denny Hunter teaching this, and I had just never considered it. When they did it all the way they were supposed to do, and they did it from their heart, God would intercede with them the same way that he intercedes with us now. And if you think about it, when they got down to the time of Christ, it's no wonder it was so hard for them to give that up. That had been the way they had worshiped and had interceded and had felt God's presence in their life, however old they were, and for generation after generation up until that time. So it's no wonder it was so difficult for them to make that change. Now, that change had to be made, but it was no wonder it was so hard for them. But it has to start with your heart being in the right place. And here this morning, it has to start with our heart being in the right place. And so if you don't get anything else out of the lesson, remember that point. I hope that you will. And this is the offering which ye shall take of them, gold and silver and brass. So you can look at this and go, okay, well, this is essentially the architect or the person who's going to be in charge deciding what items are needed to build and to furnish this tabernacle that they were getting ready to get construct. And that is true. That's what these were. But there is significance and symbolism in all of these items. And I don't know if I can explain every one of them, but there is each one of these means and has a special point that's all pointing to Jesus. And from the beginning of this book to the end of this book, if you can't make it point toward Jesus, then you're not lining it up right. And I'm not saying that I can line up every single scripture. Certainly I can't. But when God blesses me, I can line it up through his giving me the wisdom, and I can make it line up and I can see Jesus. If you're not seeing Jesus, you're missing the point. So he's telling them gold and silver and brass. Why are these things important? Well, gold was used, and as we go on in this, you'll see, was used in a lot of things in the tabernacle. And some things were just made of gold, and some things were overlaid with gold. But gold represents divinity. It represents godliness, and it represents holiness. And so that's the representation. And certainly you should be able to look towards Jesus and see God, because he was all God. He was all man as well, but he was all God. And he was certainly holy. He lived a perfect life. So the gold representing Jesus, the silver that they were asked to bring represents redemption and represents atonement. And so, again, looking to Christ, it was his sacrifice that created a way for us to be redeemed and for our sins to be atoned for. So looking forward to Jesus, silver representing Jesus. The brass represents judgment and cleansing from sin. And there were several items within the tabernacle that were made out of brass. And one of those was an altar where that they presented their offerings. They would bring twice a day, every day, they would have an offering that they made on this brass altar that sat within the courtyard of the tabernacle, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But that's where the sin offering had to be made. Now, we all know that each one of those offerings that was made, and they made it twice a day, as I understand it, every day, and then once a year they would have a special offering, and we'll talk about that. That's Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement. But we know that those, they would bring a lamb, spotless, and they would sacrifice it. We know that that is pointing forward again to Jesus. And those sacrifices that they made never took away one sin. Well, why did they do it then? Well, they were pointing forward to the day that our Lamb, Jesus, would come and offer the perfect sacrifice that would take away sin. So all of those sacrifices that they made day after day and year after year were just pointing to Jesus, again, looking forward to him. Okay, so does anybody have any questions or comments on that? All right, so the first thing that he tells them to bring is gold and silver and brass. And those are items that are going to be used in the creation of the tabernacle, and the items and the furniture in the tabernacle, all symbolic of Jesus. Verse number 4, and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair. So he's, again, he's compiling this list. And so you say, okay, well, I understand the gold and the silver and the brass. Well, the blue and the purple and the scarlet also have great symbolism, and we'll see that as we get into what actually they're used for in the tabernacle. But when you're talking about colors in the Bible, and here it works as well. So when you're thinking about blue, that's the color of the sky. That's a godly color, all right? That's representing God, and certainly they wanted that to be represented here. And again, we know that Jesus was all God and all man. So the blue is representing his godly side. The red is the color of blood that he shed for us, and so that represents the blood that he shed. It also represents what was required for remission of sin. In Leviticus, it says, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. So the red color is representing that. And then the scarlet in the middle, or I'm sorry, the purple in the middle, is if you take blue and red, you get purple. So that's kind of neat that that's in the middle. But it also is representing royalty. And Christ was, he was royal. He was, he was our priest, he was our king, he was our sacrifice, the only one able to do all of those. And so these colors, again, are all representing Jesus, if you're looking at them correctly. And so the fine linen was used in the creation of several things, and this tabernacle was made out of, essentially it was curtains. It had some things that held it up, but it was made out of linen, and it was made out of skins, and it was a tent, and so and it had to be set up and taken down, and goat's hair, which also was used. They had these put together, these goat skins that they used as the outer layer of the tabernacle. Verse 5, and ram skin dyed red, and badger skin, and shittim wood, which is also referred to in some of the wood that is referred to here. Shittim wood is also referred to as acacia wood, and apparently was a wood that was available there, and they had some access to it. Some of the commentaries suggest that when the Israelites first went into Egypt, that they took seeds for this wood and planted it there, and that those trees and grew and were abundant for them. But it was a sturdy, hard wood, and that's what they were told to bring, because it was going to be used to help make the pillars that held the tabernacle up. Ram skin dyed red. What do you think of when you think of ram skin dyed red? anytime I think of a ram, I always go back to Abraham and Isaac as they ascended the mount, and Abraham was getting ready to offer Isaac. And at the last moment, God said, you know, stop. And he told Abraham to turn, and there was a ram that was caught in the thicket just behind him. God provided a ram for Abraham as a substitute for Isaac. And certainly that's all symbolic, again, pointing forward to the day that Jesus would come and be our sacrifice. So Abraham did not have to give Isaac, but God did have to give Jesus. That was the only way that we were going to get remission from sin. Verse 6, oil for the light, spices for anointing oil, and sweet incense. So inside the tabernacle, there was one, we'll call it a menorah. It was a candlestick. It was pretty large. Mike's actually got, he printed off a photo of one of them. It was made out of gold, and it provided light for inside of the tent, the holy place. That was the only light that was in there. So they needed oil in order to have a place and have that be lit. And certainly, if you think about it, we know that Jesus is our light. He is the light of the world. And so the only light in a dark place for us and for me was Jesus. So again, all pointing forward to him. Verse 7, onyx stones and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate. So this is referring to what the high priest would wear. The high priest and other priests were the only people that were allowed to actually enter the tent that was the holy place. And the high priest was the only person who was able to go into the second place in that tent called the Holy of Holies. But they had a specific garment that they had to wear. They had a stone right on their breastplate right here on that garment, and then an ephod would actually hold the front of their garment and the back of their garment together on their shoulders. And on each one of those ephods on their shoulders, on one side were the names of, on the ephod was six of the tribes of the 12 tribes of Israel, and on the other one were the other six. And so they had all 12 of the 12 tribes on the ephods holding their outfit together. And so it was required that they bring these stones that could build this outfit for the priest to go into the place of worship. So again, all pointing toward Jesus. In verse 8, and let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. So they needed to have a place where that they could come, fulfill the requirements of the law, and God would intercede with them and bless them for doing this. Now, they made two sacrifices a day, and they would go in at least into the holy place. Now, the Holy of Holies, they only went once a year, but the holy place, they would go in and do certain things and on a daily and then a weekly basis, and we'll try to get into some of those as we move into this. According to all that I show thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it. So he gives them this design and tells them, this is what I want you to put together. And I think it was probably, a bit overwhelming to them as they're getting this, but they start assembling these things. They do take these offerings from all of the people that bring all of these things. It's significant that there had to be some bit of sacrifice on behalf of the people in order for them to be able to get to a place where they could worship. Well, why is that significant? Well, there is a bit of a sacrifice that each of us have to make. I have to make it every day, every week, if I want to be in a place where that I can actually come and worship. Well, what is that? Well, I don't have to bring my items, my physical items, but I have to sacrifice daily and try to live in a way so that I stay in a place where that I can be ready to commune with God. And so there is some sacrifice that has to be made. Well, do we have to do that to have salvation? Well, no. The only thing that you have to have salvation is you have to accept. You have to accept what Christ did for you and believe. But in order to actually commune with God then on a regular basis, there is some sacrifice that we have to do. You know, Paul said, I die daily. We have to put this man that you're looking at under subjection on a daily basis. And so it ties in with these sacrifices that they had to make here. One of the commentaries said that they think the brass probably came from mirrors that the women had that they brought with them out of Egypt. And if you think about it, most of the stuff that they brought probably came from with them out of Egypt. Whether they had taken it into Egypt initially or not, I don't know. But it was things that they had in their life that they were having to give up in order to get to the place where that they could commune with Jesus. And so I love the idea of the sacrifices that they were making. So that's as far as we go in chapter 25. Does anybody have any comments or any questions about any of that? Jesus has to be first in our life. That's a great comment. So true. Anybody else have anything? Okay. Well, let's take a look. Let's move over to chapter 26, and we're going to start with verse 1. Moreover, shalt thou make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, and blue and purple and scarlet, with cherubims of cunning work shalt thou make it. So the tabernacle itself was made of these curtains. And so let me explain the way that the tabernacle was set up. There was actually an outer court, but that was inside of what I'll call a fence. And it was these curtains that were set up. And that was 100 feet by 50 feet. All right. Those were the dimensions. So not very big. That was the outer area of the tabernacle. So if we think about it in kind of in this room, if I remember right, I think from that wall to this wall is 70 feet. Is that right, Mike? Might be 75. It's real close. It's either 70 or 75. So you kind of get an idea of about two-thirds of that, which is probably about from here maybe to that wall, about two-thirds. That would be 50 feet. So that would have been the short side, okay? It was a rectangle. And then 100 feet, so if you double that, be 100 feet long, and then the same thing. So it's a rectangle. So three of the walls, the back wall and the two side walls, there's no way to get in there. There's no doors. And then the wall where that there was a door, there was essentially a curtain that would open that would allow you to go into the outer court of the tabernacle. Now those walls had pillars that were made out of shittim wood or acacia wood, and they were overlaid with gold, and there were tents, essentially, a tent that ran between all of those all the way around. So you could not just walk up and look in to the outer court. You would have to go around and go through the door in order to get in there. And I think those were about 7 or 7.5 feet tall, the wall that went all the way around this. Okay, so I hope that paints a picture for you. Now, inside, when you would walk through the door, which was a curtain that would open up, it would take you into this tented in or fenced in area. And when you got in there, you would see three or four things. Now, when you first walked in, the first big thing that you would see the brazen altar that we talked about earlier. It was the biggest piece of furniture. It was made out of sheetum wood, but it was overlaid with brass, and it was square, and it had what's referred to as a horn, which is really just an extension that would kind of stand up. If you had a table such as this right here, if you had one more piece that came up, that would be the four corners. So there was a horn on each corner, also made out of brass. Now this altar was lifted. It probably sat on stones or some sort of something that would elevate it. And the reason I say it was lifted was because they would offer a burnt offering on top of this altar, and then there would be embers and ashes that would come through that down to the bottom, and those would have to be cleaned out. And then they would also have to then put wood back in underneath of that altar in order to have a fire going there. So that would be something that would happen regularly. So I believe that was elevated. So that brazen altar sitting there with the four horns, and that's very symbolic too. You could probably teach a couple of lessons just on that one item. The other thing that you would see is right behind that, and before you would enter into the holy place, which is a tent we'll describe here in a minute, there was an item that sat there that was full of water, and that's where the priest would go and would wash their hands and their feet prior to entering in to the holy place, into the tent that sat within this outer court. And so the priest would have some duties there with regard to making those sacrifices. They would then go to this the stand that had a tub on top of it, and it had water in it, and they would wash symbolically. Again, it's symbolism, but they're wanting to make sure that they're clean before they go in to this holy place. Now, you're saying, well, a lot of this sounds symbolic, and it's a lot of rituals and a lot of things. That's true. And the priests were blessed to be able to do these jobs, but you've got to understand, if a priest misdid his job, didn't do it correctly, didn't do some of the things correctly, do you know what the punishment was for them? Death. Absolutely. They would die. If they did, you know, if they knowingly or if they just negligently didn't do it correctly, that death was the penalty. So it was a very important step for them, each one of these things, and they tried to, you know, if your life is on the line, you're going to try to make sure you do it correctly. So you've got the brazen altar, and you've got this stand there that's got water in it so that they could wash. And then you would come to the holy place. So let me describe the holy place for you. The holy place was 15 feet wide, and it was 45 feet deep. And it sat inside this exterior that I described earlier. And it too was a tent, and it had pillars along the sides that were made out of sheetum wood, over covered with gold, and it had a covering around it. And over the very top was badger's skin, which was the very top covering of all of the other layers. So they would put that one on last, and that would protect them from the elements. The other thing that's interesting about this is if you just walked by and looked over there at the badger's skin, you really wouldn't see anything that was probably looked very impressive. It was just brown skin covering over this tent. But if you got on the inside, you got someplace that there were some very impressive things that were happening. And I think it's a lot like the world today when sometimes they look at us, they're not real impressed. But once you are born again and you get on the inside and you get communion with God, you realize that it's really beautiful. And so let's go on into the holy place just so I can kind of lay this out, and then we'll try to finish reading these verses. So when you walk inside, you would go through again a door that was made out of fine linen or one of these rugs. that you would go through, one of these skins that you would go through. The very front of the holy place had five pillars, which is interesting to me because when you get on back and you're getting ready to go into the Holy of Holies, there's four pillars. And so I think the five, anytime you run into the number five in the Bible, you should be thinking about grace. And so to me, that five signifies grace. But there's five pillars, and they've got, you know, they've got the coverings over this, but you can, a path to get through into the holy place. In order for us to get in where that we can actually commune with God, we have got to go through grace. That's the only way for us to get there. And so when you get inside, now keep in mind, if you were part of the children of Israel, you could get access to the outer court. That was an area that you were allowed to go to and be part of. Once you're going into the holy place, only the priests of the tribe of Levite were allowed in there. The high priest and the other priests that served were allowed to go into the holy place. That's inside the tent to start with. So when you walk in there, you're going to see three things inside the first room. Now this first room is 15 feet across and it's 30 feet deep. Okay? So it makes up two-thirds of the total holy place inside the tabernacle. The thing you're going to look at on the left as soon as you walk in is this golden candlestick, seven candles. And Mike's got a great picture. If you want to see it, I think it probably is very symbolic or, you know, representative of what you would see. This candlestick was made out of gold, again, representative of Jesus. It is the only light that they would have inside the holy place. It's the only light in there. There's nothing else giving off light. And the top is covered with several layers of different colors and in that badger skin. So the only light you're going to get in this place is from this candlestick. All right. So that's on the left wall, right up against the edge of the tent. On the right is a table. It's a relatively small table. It's not real big, but it's also made out of gold. And this table has a lip around it. It's probably about this big, kind of a crown around the top of the table. And on that table would be 12 pieces of shewbread, each one of those pieces of bread representing one of the 12 tribes of Israel. On top of that bread, they would have frankincense, which sits on there, which again, anybody that's read the story of Christ's birth, the frankincense should point you forward in time to Christ being born, because that's one of the gifts that the wise men brought and gave to Mary and Joseph after Christ was born. So there's these 12 pieces of bread that are representative of a continual offering to Christ. They would put those there, and they would be there for a week. They would go in on the Sabbath. They would replace those pieces of bread. The priests would eat that bread that was had been there for a week. Our pastor, glad you're here, Dad, just a while back preached a sermon and said he believes, and I think exactly right, that that bread, even after 7 days, was still fresh. Well, how can that be? Well, that's God. And I agree with him. I think the bread was still fresh. I don't think those priests were eating stale bread. I think it was fresh. But they would replace it on the Sabbath. The third thing that you would see in there was another altar. And this was the altar of incense. This one's made out of gold, a lot smaller than the brass altar that came from outside. And this altar also had a little horn on top of each of the four corners. But they would offer the frankincense as a sweet smell to God. Now, I want to tell you, and we don't have time to get into all that, but I think that smell and that frankincense is representative of our prayers that we pray that go up to God. And so it's representative, but our prayers are important. If you don't ever think your prayers are important, why were they offering that frankincense on a regular basis up to God? Another thing that I came across, which I think is just beautiful, is that they never offered fresh embers in that altar of incense. So in other words, they wouldn't come in and light a fire to offer that incense, those prayers up to God. The embers that they placed in that altar of incense came from the embers of the brazen altar out in the outside of the holy place. So what's that signifying? Well, we've got sacrifices that we have to make. And again, back to, we have to live a life before God that's acceptable to Him. And once we make that sacrifice, then our prayers have a way of going up and reaching God. If we're not living in a way and making that sacrifice out on the brazen altar outside of the tent, then there's no embers to warm those prayers to send them up to God. So again, I thought that was just beautiful when I ran across that they never put fresh embers in there. So that is the holy place. So the priests would go in there and they would, you know, do their duties. They would also put blood that had come from the animal that was slain out on the brazen altar on the four horns of that altar of incense inside the holy place. Now, we're going to run out of time. There's a veil that separates the first 30 feet from the last 15 feet. And it's one solid veil that goes all the way across. There are four pillars that are made out of shittim wood covered with gold that hold that veil in place between the holy place and the holy of holies, the back room. Why are there four instead of five? I think the fours represent Christ, just like everything else here has. I think it represents, to me, it represents the four gospels of the books of Christ, the books of the Bible, talking about Christ's life. But there's a difference of coming into the holy place and then going into the holy of holies. And so the only person, one, could go through that veil back into the holy of holies. That person was the high priest. Now there was a high priest that was elected and was part of the Levite tribe. But Christ is spiritually our high priest. And so he, for us, was the one who was able to go in behind the veil. Now, what was behind this veil? Well, they would go once a year. They would go on the Day of Atonement. The Jews still celebrate this. It's Yom Kippur, or Yom Kippur. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's the Day of Atonement. On that day, that one day, the high priest, they would go in and they would do their other requirements, but he would go behind that last veil into that Holy of Holies. So what was in there? Well, the Ark of the Covenant, which was made out of shittim wood overlaid with gold, was in there. And inside the Ark, there were some very special things. We don't have time to get into them. But on top of the Ark was the last piece of furniture that was for the tabernacle, and it was the mercy seat. And this mercy seat sat, it was probably, I don't know exactly how wide it was, but it was made out of gold, and it had a seat that was open right on top of it, but on each end of the mercy seat was a cherubim, an angel, that was standing there with its wings pointed toward the middle. Okay, so on this side, the cherubim would be like this with its wings pointed this way, and on this side it would be like this. Now, I want to make this point. The wings on those two cherubims touched. Most of the pictures that you will see show a gap between the cherubim's wings. The wings touched. Well, how do you know they touched? Well, they represent the coverage of salvation from the beginning of time until the end of time, and there has never been a gap in the time that we've been able to access salvation. Not from Adam, not down to the last person, whoever that is. They touch, all right? They touched in the temple that Solomon built, and they touched in this tabernacle on the mercy seat. The mercy seat, the high priest would go in and he would sprinkle blood that he had taken from the animal that had just been killed, and he would sprinkle it on that altar, and that was the representation for atonement. Now, when Jesus died on the cross, spiritually, he took his own blood, because he was our sacrifice, and he entered into the Holy of Holies, and he sprinkled his own blood, because he was our high priest. He sprinkled that on the mercy seat, and he did that one time. And that atoned for all man from there back to Adam, and it atoned for all man from there forward until the end of time, and God says we're done. So he was the only person that was capable of being the sacrifice and the high priest. All right. One other thing about the Day of Atonement that's really interesting. They would bring two goats for sacrifice on that day. And one of the goats, they would cast lots to decide which one was which. One of the goats would be slaughtered, and his blood would be the blood that was taken in and placed in the Holy of Holies. The other goat would have the blood sprinkled on his head and the sins of humanity spoken over him, and he would be let go. That was the scapegoat. Probably heard that term, but that's where it comes from. The scapegoat, or the goat that escaped. Well, Christ, again, because of who he was and able to raise himself from the dead, served as both our sacrifice, and his blood was sprinkled on the Holy of Holies, on the mercy seat. And he was also the one who was able to escape. While he died, he rose. And so he was both of those. And isn't it interesting that in our society today that the term goat stands for greatest of all time? Well, I'm telling you that Jesus Christ is the goat. He is the greatest of all time. The only one capable of being our sacrifice and our priest. So we didn't get to the last chapter, but I covered a lot of the material that was in there. I hope that was a blessing to you. I hope you learned something. I've gotten a blessing studying it this week. As you can tell, I'm out of time, and I'm out of voice, and I'm out of energy. So thank you for your prayers. I hope we have a wonderful service this morning. I'm going to go back home and lay down.